You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
This is grass, this a table, this a tree. All nod, yes, yes, complacent, assured. But a shadow slides over it, over the whole known world. Not a tree, a shadow tree. And the black crows, big as cats, who strut at its feet with the real messengers, jabbing for grubs, clasping the smooth ovals of pecans in their beaks. The witness speaks a mirror movement. Or if not messengers, then what? A figure, too neat, easily assimilated, just a way to fit the unknown into our lexicon, to name, feel safer, accommodate. What if, in the shadow life of the body, a million processes firing in all directions, unseen, internal, one direction goes off track, strikes out on its own path, a cell thinking for itself?
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. You just listened to Joy Manasiotis read an excerpt from her poem, This. What are we talking about today, Stacy?
Today we're going to be talking about writer workspaces, and we're going to hear from a bunch of writers about the quirky and crazy places, or some of them are quirky and crazy and some of them not so much, that they like to work, where they like to write, when they're writing.
And what's interesting about them, I think, is that they don't all agree. But what's more interesting about them is that we're going to rate them, and we're probably going to judge them based on where we like to rate the most as well, huh?
Yeah, and I was planning on just crowning a winner based on who I thought was the best. But, right. You know, but I guess we can talk about it, Scott. I can listen to what you have to say, but... You know, I think we're going to do author cribs today at the end. We're going to crown the king or queen of the crib.
Well, the first contestant, we'll go back to Joy Manasiotis. She originally published this poem, This, in Ninth Letter. She's the author of They Sing to Her Bones from New Issues Press. She lives in California and teaches in the creative writing department at the University of Redlands. And she was interviewed by our own Steve Edwards, who published Breaking into the Backcountry at the University of Nebraska Press.
My workspace is a room at the top of my house. My current workspace is a room at the top of my house, which looks out over trees and has a big, comfortable chair in it. Actually, I'd have a bed in here if I could, but I can't fit a bed in. You know, the most essential thing, of course, is the window that I need to look out. And no one in my family comes into my study unless they're invited in. So that's one of the rules of the space. I also have another space that I work in the summer because I am not here in the summers, and I am fortunate to have the use of a friend's house on the beach on the Oregon coast. And so in that house, it's really a cabin. I use a room that's entirely made out of glass, actually, and is all window. And looks out over the ocean, which is, you know, fabulous, of course. But so I have sort of my regular workspace and then my summer workspace.
You mentioned a window to look out of as something significant. Could you talk more about that, or what do you find out there?
It's really necessary to me. I have to be able to look out over some distance in which nothing is happening. I mean, that there's no human activity. It's very important to me that I have a space, a window where I can look out. And I was thinking about Stanley Kunitz had, when he had a home in Provincetown, and he had a beautiful garden, incredibly beautiful garden. But his workspace was in the basement facing the compost heap. And he talked about that because he said he didn't want to look out. He wanted to be totally enclosed. He didn't want any distractions. He didn't want to see his beautiful garden. He wanted to be looking at a wall or at something that would at his compost heap, so that it would trigger an interior kind of space for him. For me, looking out triggers that interior space, but it can't be like in a cafe or where there are other people around. That would be incredibly difficult for me.
In terms of where you work and this workspace, how much of it for you is a consciously made space, something that you've crafted in order to enter that stillness of mind or concentration that you talked about?
Well, I'm maybe a little embarrassed to admit this, but
sorry.
I think every inch of it is a made space, actually. In the case of this particular room, we actually built it. So it was built to my specifications. And so every inch of it has, I've thought through every, where every, you know, plug is, where the windows are, what the size is. But then, you know, in addition to that, the way that the room is set up and where the desk is and where the chair is and where all the objects, that's all very carefully chosen on my part. Which is maybe has something to do with my suspicion, you know, my worry about superstitions and things like that. I'm trying to set up the space that will allow me to find the quiet, really, to connect to that kind of authentic interiority that I'm looking for. I mean, I like to work not through the entire process, but in the much of the process, I'm trying to work as close to the dream state as I can. And so I'm trying to set up a space, you know, in a life that's very complicated and very engaged in many different levels, I'm trying to set up a space that allows me to become quiet enough to connect to that dream place again and keep that alive while I'm working.
Joy Manasiotis really has worked hard to construct a space, and travel writers don't really have that luxury. So we're going to hear from the author, Stephanie Elizondo Greist, author of Mexican Enough, My Life Between the Borderlines, about what spaces travel writers work in.
So what do I need to have? I need lots of light, and I need an ergonomic chair, and I need... and what I carry with me everywhere I go, I actually have a little satchel full of little again, here's my little Catholicism, my little Catholic girl self coming through, but little amulets that I've collected, some religious, some sort of pagan, you know, a couple of rocks that I've collected, one in Tibet, one in Spain, a feather that a really close friend gave me. Anyway, it's a very, very, very small little bag, very lightweight, but very necessary. And I have a way of setting them up exactly the same way. No matter where I am, no matter where I go, I set these little oracles out. And they kind of sing to me at night. And I don't know, I wake up refreshed and I can write again.
I love Grice oracles, and I love that you can write anywhere. And I think poet Marvin Bell, the author of Vertigo, the Living Dead Man poems, is also someone who can write anywhere. But for him, it's also about when, maybe even more so than where.
You know, I can write anywhere. Not so much can, but need to, I suppose. I can write in motel rooms. I wrote at my office at the university. I wrote in my office when I was in the Army. I wrote in offices at the University of Chicago Law School, where I worked as the stack supervisor at the library. I had a master key, and I let myself into other people's offices. However, what I really like is to be able to set my laptop up on the dining room table and do things that are not writing poetry usually. And then late at night, which is when I tend to write, I'm alone anyway. My wife has gone to sleep usually or gone up to bed early, and I just stay up very, very late. I've always written very, very late. And so I end up alone, but in what you might consider a very social, public part of the house.
I've heard that said before, but rather, as I think about the dining room table that Marvin Bell says, I've heard that said before, that it's best to write when everyone else is dreaming. But I don't know, so far I think Greist might be kicking butt a little bit with those oracles. I think those are the quirkiest, coolest thing I've heard so far. But next we're going to hear from ZZ Packer, author of the New York Times notable book Drinking Coffee Elsewhere. And I'm surprised, but ZZ Packer, here we go. She's a cafe writer.
My favorite writing environment would probably be, you know, a cafe where I'm able to be around people and where there's a great deal of white noise. I think that sometimes when I have absolute silence, it's difficult to write. I'm kind of left, my mind is left to its own devices and begins what, you know, Zen practitioners call monkey mind, you know, going from branch to branch and not really able to settle. But I have discovered that, you know, after a couple of weeks in a place like a coffee shop, then I, you know, end up knowing some of the people who are there and there are greater disruptions, and I begin to notice things a little more there in my environment, and the white noise actually comes to the fore, and I don't know what the opposite of white noise is, but noise, I guess. and then I'm not able to write as well or produce as much. And then generally I go back to that silent environment where if I can somehow tame my monkey mind, then I can actually get some stuff done.
So there seems to be a little bit of back and forth about silence and noise and what kind of noise and what's better. And I'm going to offer one more writer who I think is pretty odd. The workspace is pretty awesome. And this will be my last one. And it's Nuni Krahor, author of The Juno Charm, who's going to tell us a little bit about the stuff she collects around her while she writes.
So I have this little old desk that was made in Dublin in about 1900 with a drawer, and it's full of chewing gum and business cards and stuff like that. I'm a clutter bug, so there's a lot of clutter around me. But I keep nice things around me too. There's a postcard of Sylvia Plath, who is one of my heroines. There's a picture of the Eiffel Tower with a lady in a red coat in front of it, which I like. There's a sign on the wall that says, "To imagine is everything." There's bookshelves to my right. I'm just looking to see what's there. The Paris Review interviews are there, 4 volumes of those. My Oxford Dictionary and my thesaurus. My humble little Toshiba laptop, and pots of pens, and I have a list of things to submit to, magazines to submit to, like a list with dates. I have a paperweight which is relevant to the novel I just finished. One of the characters in the novel collects paperweights, so the paperweight sits on my desk. And I have a look plate for my novel as well. I'm at the moment looking for a new agent. So I have a little silver plate filled with things I found on the beach and lucky pennies and things to kind of give luck to my novel as it goes off to the agencies.
I can really connect with Nuala. I'm a clutter bug. I have piles on my desk, and I have things around me that I try to use as inspiration. But it's also interesting to listen to a guy like Israeli writer Edgar Carret, author of stories called Suddenly There Was a Knock at the Door. And what's interesting about him is kind of what's not there.
Well, where I'd like to write, I have to be in a space that will be where I'll be on my own. That's the crucial thing. You know, I cannot write, let's say, in a room in an apartment when there's somebody else in the apartment, because there's something about writing that it's a little bit like getting into a trance. And the whole idea is that when I write, I'm kind of in the story world. And the moment that I can hear somebody in the apartment or I can see somebody, I have to kind of deal with the fact that it's just kind of an illusion, you know, that I'm not really there and it ruins things for me. Because I'm not the kind of guy that kind of looks out of the window and gets inspired, you know. And one of those days, one of the writers asked to visit my studio. And when he came, he looked around and he said to me, "I want to ask you a question." He said, "You know, from 3 directions, you can see a beautiful forest in the snow, yet the way that you placed your laptop on the table means that when you write, you're directly facing the toilet. So why are you doing it?" And I said to him, "Honestly, you know what? Because when I write, I'm not here."
That's awesome, isn't it?
Facing the toilet.
We talked to 6 writers, and only Edgar Carret could get us to the toilet and still be right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I sort of, I a little bit want to crown him the winner because of the facing the toilet, but I do like Stephanie Elizondo Grice's little oracle singing. I don't. What do you think, Scott?
I'm not too sure our executive producer was all that excited about this idea, because eventually we ended up in a toilet. But I really think we learned something today. You know, I don't want to define what it is, but we learned something. The full interview with Joy Manasiotis and Steve Edwards will be available at prairieschooner.unl.edu.
Stay with us all summer, because school is out, but Air Schooner is in.
And thank God for that.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Robert Fugli, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.